Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Marshall Hurst. Marshall has been working in education for 20 years. He started out as a teacher, coach, club sponsor, and bus driver at a small rural school. The school was the same one that Marshall attended growing up. After 9 years, he decided he needed to change and to grow as a teacher. He only had the experience of what it was like to learn and teach at the same school. So he spent the next 5 years under a grant program funded by the Arkansas Department of Education. He started out at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, working in a program that served as a bridge between the college and local schools. Then he went to work for the Arkansas Department of Education in their Office of Professional Development, where he coordinated the Literacy Design Collaborative and the Mathematics Design Collaborative. Both programs were developed by the Gates Foundation, and he had the opportunity to present and participate in state panels throughout the nation. Marshall is currently in his sixth year of teaching math at Northside High School in Fort Smith, Arkansas. And Northside is the most diverse school in the state and has completed its first year of being a model professional learning community, PLC at work, and is recognized by SolutionTree. He is involved with Justin's Renaissance as well to be sure every student is recognized within the school. Welcome to the podcast, Marshall.
Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we'll talk about some of these different experiences you've had throughout your career. And also, I wanted to highlight that you said you live in Oklahoma, but teach in Arkansas. So
that's a little bit different.
We'll talk a little bit about your school and just some of the things that you've been doing there as well. But let's start out with that trench story, time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Well, I think a lot of who I am today, I was lucky enough to, so this story is about when I was a student myself. Growing up, we had a single mother, me and my brother. We lived with my grandmother in a what we would call an Indian home that was built by the Choctaw Nation here in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. We had commodities, you know, we had lots of pasta and things like that that we were lucky enough to have. And a lot of times we not only had us living there, but we had my aunt and her son, along with a couple of other cousins, in a small three-bedroom house where my mom was only working. And, you know, the idea of something else being out there was not really something that I was able to see, because we just kind of lived day to day. I mean, that's how I grew up. You kind of wake up, you survive the day, and you go on to the next. And you know, you enjoy the people that you're around. But I was lucky enough to have some teachers that were a big part of my life. And one of them, her name was Mrs. Hogan. She was my English teacher our junior year. And we had the opportunity to take her for a creative writing course our senior year. She selected a few of us. And towards the end of that year, she held us during lunch. And I know you can't see this, but if I can describe it, she kind of held up a rock. Mm-hmm. And it's the plainest rock you can imagine, gray. And she says, take a few words and describe this to me. And so a lot of what I described was, well, it's a rock that you see anywhere. It's something that there's not much value to it. I mean, I would probably kick it, you know, if I saw it in my way and go on. And she said, you know, you're going to go in life and you're going to meet a lot of people who see you as this rock. She said, they're not going to see a whole lot of value in you. If you're not useful to them, they'll kick you out of the way. And you know, you're one in a million to them. And so then she turns the rock over and it's actually a geode. Aww. And to describe this, you know, she said, I see more than that in you. And she said, I see something unique, something that's beautiful that people will appreciate something that has been hardened by pressure over time and created to be something that, you know, that people see. And she's like, you might not feel it now, you might not see it now, but it's going to be a part of you. And that kind of, from that moment on, anytime I deal with anybody, you know, of course, some things hurt, you know, that you really would like for it to happen. But at the same time, I know that those type of things that you go through make you who you are.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I took the long way. You know, they told me about college. I had another coach that gave me a calculator for graduation. He said, I know that you're going to do great. And, you know, I'm a math teacher now. And, and they kind of foresaw that. And I had the great opportunity to come back and actually work with these people, especially Mrs. Hogan. She was the librarian by the time I came back. And I don't know how many hours I spent in the library with her talking about things that were going on. And now that I look back on it, I probably wasn't a very good teacher at the time because of, you know, when you go back to the school that you grew up in, I kind of fell into the same traps that, you know, I learned in. But at the same time, she said, you know, you're going to do, you know, keep working at it, keep doing things. And so, you know, at a certain point, that's when I decided to either I was going to stay there my whole life or I needed to grow. And so I took that step out there, out of my comfort zone, I still live here in this town, but at the same time, I feel like I've grown tremendously the last 11 years to be able to do some of the things I do, but I wouldn't be here and be the teacher I am today without this. And this is actually I know you can't see this, but this is actually the same geo that she gave me that's on my desk on a daily basis on the corner of my desk. So, anytime I'm having a rough day, I use this as a reminder. And this is my last week of school. This is what I tell students. I give them the same lesson I learned. And I want them to make sure that no matter what happens, I hope that they don't think back 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now and go, man, that Mr. Hurst sure could teach about complementary angles. That's not what I want them to remember me by. I hope they say, man, I really did like having Mr. Hurst in class, and he made me feel valued, and he really believed in me. And when I saw him in the hallway anytime, I knew that when he said, what's up, that it wasn't just a greeting. It was something that I was sincere about and that I would be there for him. And that's the biggest part of me on a daily basis. And I think that's what helps me be successful from what I see or what I'm happy with in my own teaching. So a lot of this, you know, you have those moments that you feel that it's hard, but again, I mean, it's just, you got to think back to those pressured times that, you know, continues to make those different facets in your life and makes you unique. So anyway, so that's kind of my out of the trenches story and why I'm here today doing what I do. So
yeah, and that's so inspirational to hear, like how she used that metaphor of a rock that you physically still have and that you're able to reflect back on, tell your own students about. That kind of helps you through those difficult times. And I'm interested in kind of hearing about, because you said, you know, changing schools, you know, getting outside of that comfort zone of working where you'd grown up helped you, but also in the past year or so, you've also been growing as a writer, you know, exploring areas of change. And we can start by just kind of talking about some of the blogging. So you're also blogging for the Teach Better team. And kind of what you've explored through your writing and blogging.
Well, it started about, two or three years ago of starting to really dive deeper into reading different cultural books. And about a year ago, I got a hold of Culturized by Jimmy Cassis. And one of the things he said in there is he said, when he decided to start writing his book, he started blogging. And at the same time, I had the opportunity to join a group, the unlocking unlimited potential on the road to awesome with Brandon Beck and Darren Peppard. And it just kind of all came together all of a sudden there. And I started creating my own website. And I thought, mm-hmm. I'm just going to, you know, that first blog was about, I call it my cornerstone, and it's about this story. And it took me several weeks. I mean, you can't keep writing it down and going back and changing and thinking, this isn't good enough. You know, am I going to look like a fool throwing this out there for everyone mm-hmm. to read? And because I feel that I have a story that needs to be shared. And, this last year has given me this opportunity, even though it's been hard because of all the changes and all the pivots on a daily basis. You know, you kind of understand that you do have limited time and that there's opportunities that, you know, you need to take. And so, again, everything came together all at once. I got that first blog post done. I did a second one about a month later, and it just started coming together. And so at the same time, I had some other people that I met that was part of the Teach Better ambassador team, and mm-hmm. they were blogging, and Liv Chan was doing some things like that. So I thought, well, I'm just going to put in my application to become a blogger for Teach Better, this huge website that has over 100 bloggers. And, I've already done two on my own personal mm-hmm. blog that maybe, 30 people have visited so far. But, it was an opportunity that happened. And then the last two blog posts I've had, seen every time it seems to get easier and ideas come to me and here it goes. I need to share this. And when you've been in teaching for 20 years and some of the experiences that we have, I mean, these are things that the next generation coming up, mm-hmm. they need to know about what, mm-hmm. Some of the things. I mean, when I first started out, No Child Left Behind was such a big deal. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, we've pivoted in the last year to what's essential. What are the essential skills that we need? Mm-hmm. So we went from teaching so wide to narrowing our focus in to go deeper. And that's what mm-hmm. I love about education. And you got to continue to grow. You got to step out there, try different things. Technology, I used to be good at it, and seems to be I get slower as I get older. And so, it's just what can I do to make it better, to engage students? Cell phones used to be taboo in the classroom. Now, I did a Kahoot today and I'm like, computer's not working, get out your cell phone. Let's go. Let's do it. Take pictures, you can't write it down. Take a picture of it, write it down later. And so you just gotta, you can't just say, stand up there and talk at them. It's just not going to work. So exciting. I mean, I hope you hear it in my voice. It's like, come on, it's like, what's next? What other opportunities do we have? So now I want to get up to the opportunities to speak more and to do those type of things. And so it's just a fun time. Fun mm-hmm, time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I kind of feel the same way as you, having been in education for around the same amount of time and seeing the changes in policy, right? And, kind of looking at now what's essential, right? But also continuing to grow and observing things through a different lens, right? Maybe 10 years ago, I would have said, no touching cell phones, but, having cell phone out or any of that. But I get what you're saying about, it's a tool for assess, when you're doing those informal assessments like Kahoot, or you're doing just any type of, taking pictures of notes or things like that. So it's, we don't want it to be a distraction, but it's integrated into needing, it for pictures or for notes or things like that. So
our online platform, I have kids that type faster with their fingers than they do with their keyboard. And they're taking pictures and inserting it into the slides. And I mean, they're just doing amazing things. They show me things most of the time, especially mm-hmm. I heard a Blookit today was, they said, you shouldn't be using Kahoot anymore. There's a new thing, Blookit. It's really fun. And so my daughter was telling me about it. So now I got to check it out in the next few days. So, it's just always something.
I mean, yeah. I'm one of those people who still like Kahoot. You know, my son, who's in eighth grade, likes it better than some of the other assessments. But yeah, there's always new things out there, and people tend to use just to, you know, kind of figure out where their niche is and what they like to use in their classroom. But I wanted to talk a little bit about that journey from teaching at the rural school that you went to, and you know, teaching the way you were taught, and then kind of discovering a little bit through your work with the state Department of Ed to kind of working now in the school that you're at. How did that evolve? How did your outlook on teaching evolve?
Well, you know, it's funny that when you go to school and college, and I'm sure people that have went through a college of education can appreciate this. The big thing is doing lesson plans and developing that curriculum. And I've spent hours on the greatest lesson plan you've ever seen. It's the greatest lesson I'm ever going to do. And you get in there first hour and you give it, and it just sinks. I mean, it's just like nobody's responsive, nobody's understanding it. And when I worked for the Department of Education, I got to do a lot of visits. I got to do a lot of different classroom observations in a lot of different type of schools, and working with a lot of teachers. And the best teachers I saw were ones that could change on the fly. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just formatively assess. I think Dr. Dylan Willem says, day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute, formatively assess your students by, you know, observing them, you know, social cues, things like that, and making adjustments. And once I figured that out, and you start, and you know, sometimes I have to apologize to my first hour, because I do teach one class four times a day. And it gets way better by the fourth time, you know. And so the next day, first hour, I'm starting by, you know, let me go back and talk about this more. And so it's like a, you know, it's like a continuing curve that you just continue to curve back, you know. And so it's, you know, and so I see some of my students from 20 years ago when I was at Spiro, because again, what I saw was you have a textbook, you start on page one, and by the end of the year, you hope to be at the end of the book.
Yeah.
And so much of what I learned is now I don't even use a textbook. Yeah, I pull some things out of different textbooks, but a lot of what I do is how to, you know, develop them as their own resources to start getting their own way. You know, it's not about my way. And so a lot of times I'm using them as teachers for me, and to say, you know, okay, let's find out different ways to do things. And that, again, that couldn't have happened until I stepped out of that and said, okay, what do I need to change about myself? And even in the last 5-6 years of being back here, you know, at Northside, from that first year till now, I continue to make adjustments. And things change all the time, and I'm writing notes, and I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do different next year? And so, you know, I might go back to that eventually, of going back to some things I did a few years ago. But at the same time, it's just, you know, continuing to process that and grow and just continue to formatively assess and change minute to minute. And every hour is not even the same. Some students just get it differently. So I might have to, I'm a big storyteller. So, you know, sometimes I might have to figure out a different way to talk about it. And so that's the, just never putting my feet in concrete and let, you know, just saying, this is what it is. This is what I'm going to do. And there's nobody, anything, you know, there's nothing anybody can do about it. You just have to be flexible.
Yeah. And I get out what you're saying about that. When you're teaching four different sections of the same class, right? And you're trying to change it up, and different kids in the different classes have different needs, right? And you can't always be at the same place with every class, right? Because, that's a flexibility, right? And it's also the, you know, like you said, at the beginning of your career, it was going from page one to the end of the book, right? And now it's pulling in different resources, seeing what you can use to have kids learn best, right? Not being tied to the textbook, which as a world language teacher, I always I taught until around 2015. I was usually using the textbook, and more in the last 6 years, kids have moved away from the textbook for world language. But math, I still see a lot of textbooks being used. So that's good to know that you're, you know, you pull resources, you use different things than just the textbooks, and because you're evolving, like you said.
Yeah. It's a,
and
so again, some things don't work, and you just have to find something else, and that's fine. That's just learning in general. I mean, you just have to continue. I tell, it's called, you know, we call it productive struggle. You know, the things I've learned the best in my life are things that I've really struggled at the most. The things that I get on an easy basis, you know, I mean, you take for granted those things. The things that I, that are going to stick with me are the things that I'm really going to really work through and really try to understand what happened there. And so, you know, I have kids who say, well, I've never been good at math. And I said, well, you're going to be one of the best math students I've ever had then, because we're going to, you know, we're going to productively struggle through it. We're going to fail sometimes, but that's what makes us successful, is getting through that.
So, yeah. Well, that's a great way to look at it, right? Because I probably would have been that student to say, I'm not good at math. It's going to be really hard. But to have a teacher say, well, we're going to, you know, you're going to be one of the best students. You're going to discover new things about yourself, those type of ways to approach it, right? It kind of gets those kids out of their, I think, limiting belief mindset.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your work with Justin's Renaissance. So I have had Darren Peppert on the show, and you know, he talked a little bit about it, but what have you done with Justin's Renaissance, for example, in some of the PD you've given to teachers at your school in terms of culture?
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
Okay. Well, we had the great fortune of 3 years ago, our principal went to one of the summer conferences and came back and said, we need to do this. Mm-hmm. And we have about, at the time we had about 1,800 students, and now we've added another grade. So we're at about 2,500. And so we have about 150 to 170 teachers, you know. And so you watch the video and, you know, I was kind of sitting there going, really, you know, is this something that we really need? And, you know, are we really going to we're kind of, you know, busy. And so I sat there and thought about it. And so I wanted, you know, I thought, well, let's go with it. Let's just do it. And so I became part of the initial team, and we just continued to really, when we first started out, it's like, okay, what do we need to do? And one of the first things we did is change from faculty and staff to staffly. We're all together as one. We're all one family. We're here to support each other. And then, okay, how are we going to start recognizing students? How are we going to find those students that have fallen through the crack? How are we going to make sure that people know that we care about them? And so we did the pulse survey, and we kind of, you know, learned some things that were hard. Where we thought that we were doing a good job of just even knowing a student's names, the students didn't think we did, or that we knew what they were interested in. And so, you know, so we took that information and we just started, this is our third year, and it's been a, some days it's hard and some days it's not easy, but as we continue to learn things, some of the things that we've had the most success with are thank you notes. Something as simple as that. A few years ago, we just did a simple, we handed them out to everyone, and you could write a thank you note to the teacher, to a fellow student, and kids were excited to get those notes. I mean, and it was their best friend that they talked to probably 1,000 times a day, but it said, you know, Johnny, I appreciate you being there for me. And as a teacher, you know, to get some of them are just, you know, I think sometimes you're surprised that you, like, I'll get some from somebody that I don't even realize that they enjoy my class, because I'm like, why do you really like my class? Because, you know, you kind of give me a lot of trouble on a daily basis here, you know, and come to find out that they love the fact that I pay attention and want them to do better. And I want them to be good, and I want them to learn. And at the end of the year, you know, it's like, thank you. And when I have those tough days, I always try to keep them handy because I pull them out and I need to read some of them on it, you know, every once in a while. And I got one last year I can't really repeat on here, but it was like, I just basically boiled down to, I like the fact that I can kid around with you and you're not going to get your feelings hurt about it. And mm-hmm. the same with me. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of that, and last year we had to go to digital because of the COVID issues. We didn't want to be handling as much paper at the time. We didn't know a whole lot about things. And so we had to pivot again. Yeah. And we had to do things digitally. And I kind of did a merge and was able to do some mailings and things. And so, and then send those out. But that's a big one. This year we've started something called Earn Your Claws, where the Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. And so we had the freshmen come up with us for the first time this year. And so we decided, you know, we have the only group of kids that we have in our school right now that have had a regular part of high school is our seniors, and they only had one semester. So we have a group of juniors, sophomores, and freshmen that have never had a regular year in high school. And so we wanted to take this opportunity to kind of reboot what it means to be a Grizzly, mm-hmm. and to earn your claws, bear down. I mean, we're coming up with all these sayings that we want them to understand what is expected of them as a Grizzly. And so mm-hmm. part of that was I got some former alumni from, you know, all the way back. I got a senator, a United States senator. He graduated from our school. He talked about what it means to be a Grizzly, some pro professional athletes, what it means to be a Grizzly, to a local doctor, what it means to be a Grizzly. And we're having kind of a competition that involves attendance, your attitude on, you know, mm-hmm. whether or not you get sent to the office, and academics. And at the end of the year, the class that has the most claws, we're going to have a big, huge celebration with that group. And, you know, we're just going to have fun. And so far this year, the seniors are doing real good on spirit and winning the pep rally. But at the same mm-hmm. time, the freshmen are doing real good about participation and voting in teacher of the month and, you know, their grades and attendance. And, you know, so we're trying to get the juniors and sophomores involved more now. And who's been the Dr. Rathman, our principal, she gives out special awards where they get extra claws. And so at the, you know, we're just trying to keep pushing that, what it means to earn your claws. And then our biggest award at the end of the year, we have an award called Spirit of a Grizzly. Mm-hmm. And so we want to pick that senior that embodies what it really means to be a Grizzly. And we give them an award at the graduation practice. And so, you know, the reason that we're doing that is we're just trying to set that culture. And it's working because we have another high school in town, and we're starting to see a shift of all of a sudden people are like, what's going on over there?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what they, and they have a choice of which high school to go to. And so I'm proud to say that we've had some people, you know, who say, well, maybe I want to check out Northside, and you know, and so they come over. But this last, when we were getting ready for school, bringing in the ninth grade teachers, Dr. Rathman asked if I could help do a PD session about culture in the classroom and what, mm-hmm. you know, what we do here. And one of the biggest things I talked about, and I think this happens a lot everywhere, is dealing with classroom management. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's not about the rules that are in place, but sometimes it's about some of the decisions that we make as teachers.
Yeah.
And, you know, if a student comes in late, and I'm guilty about this just as much as anybody else, but I try to remember, I don't know the reason they might be late. You know, it might be they're checking on a family member. They, you know, they needed, there was something else that was priority to them at that time. And I understand I have some students that just are slow to class. But, you know, if they come in and you single them out right from the very moment that they're coming into class, and everybody, you know, you have 30 kids in class and 29 of them turn their heads to look at this person coming in late, and you're hammering them, if they're having a bad day, you've just caused a problem for you for the remaining 50 minutes of class. And you know, sometimes teachers can continue, you know, well, let's get out of homework. Well, I bet you didn't do your homework. I bet you don't even have a pencil, you know, and again, Jimmy Cassis talks about that. And eventually the student explodes.
Yeah.
And says, forget you, you know, I'm just not going to do it. And then you say, you've backed yourself into a corner, and then you're like, well, you need to go to the office then. You can't talk to me that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes it's not about that student. It's about the decisions that we make. And I tell students, I said, you know, if you're having a bad day, let me know. Come talk to me before class. If you're expecting a phone call or a text because somebody's in the hospital, let me know. I'm not going to jump on you for, you know, I don't want them to be so distracted because of what might happen in their pocket
that
they can't concentrate on me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I want them to feel comfortable. There are going to be accidents in class. They're going to have bad days. I might be having a bad day, but I can't let that affect me as a teacher. I have to come in and this, they're my number one priority. And so I wanted to share that with teachers. You know, is the battle over cell phones really something that you want to do on a daily basis where you're concentrating a majority of your energy on that cell phone? Or because they didn't bring a pencil to class, you're concentrating your energy to make sure that they bring a pencil. So, you know, I keep pencils at the front. I keep paper at the front.
Yeah.
I keep extra everything, you know. I have an extra charger for their Chromebooks. You know, they ask, can I sit over here and charge? Yeah, I need your Chromebook charged. I need you concentrating on me, not worrying about that 1%. And so I think once that happens, and I have students test me. I have students who, you know, where if you come in a bad mood on your face, you have some students who go, oh, we're going to have fun with Mr. Hurst today. We're going to, you know, today's the day. We're going to get him. And, you know, so I try to come in with a smile. Hey, good morning. Good afternoon. How's it going? And just to let them know, set the tone.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. I mean, it's just, I found that I don't have to. And again, my first year, if you looked at me wrong, I probably sent you to the office.
Yeah.
You know, think back to those days. It's like, oh my goodness, did I send like 1,000 people to the office that year? Yeah, I probably did. And it was, what'd you say to me? You know, and so now it's like, I just laugh. You know, I have a family of five, you know, five kids at home and my wife, and there's so much more once the day's over. And I told some of them that. I said, you take one day at a time. Mm-hmm. And once that bell rings, you're going to have to do some extra work. But ultimately, that's my time with my family. And I think once you let go of that, and once you say, you know, that'll be there tomorrow. And I know, again, there are some priority things that you have to get done. And I think once you start doing that, teaching becomes so much better. It becomes so much more fulfilling. And you become so much better at it because you're not stressed about things as much. You're, you know, it happens, and you just go on with it. That's just life. I mean, it's just, we got to continue to do that. And that's what I try to do with, you know, when you're at Northside, you got to be 100 every day. And students see if you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a, you know, the culture is there, and I want them to be successful. And I want teachers to know that they can depend on me as much as students can. And so we have a lot of discussions like that. So it's been a, I don't think that we'd be able to do that without Jostens. And I know it's a, you know, some people go, it's a program, and no, it's not. I mean, it's something that you got to buy into. You got to really invest yourself. And I think once you get everybody on your side, you'll see some major changes.
So. Yeah. So like you weren't really on board when you first heard about it, but then you joined that initial team and helped kind of change the culture of the school and everything you've been talking about with the awards, the Spirit of the Grizzly, right? The awards for, you know, the kids getting, earning their claws, attendance, attitude, those type of things, all that helps, you know, bring up the culture of the school. And, you know, you're talking about kind of the reactions like in class as well, the teachers, you know, learn to be proactive instead of reactive, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, work with the kids, you know, like you're saying, you're being proactive. You have those chargers there for the Chromebooks, the pencil and the paper. So people don't have to be afraid to ask if they don't have a pencil, right? They just come up and get it, right? So,
Oh, yeah.
So,
I want to take away those things. I mean, it's just the more a kid has to worry about coming into a class, it's just the less that they're going to be able to pay attention on you. So it's just like, let's get it out of the way. Sometimes it takes a few minutes for them. Something's happened. Let's get it out, you know, because we got stuff. We got to get going. And so let's get it out of the way now, you know, but once this 2 minutes is over with, guys, we're going on to the next step. So we're going to talk about some geometry and we're going to go. And I think that that helps in a lot of ways. So that's, and that's, again, this is something that continues to evolve for me. And I just try to grab a hold of as many books. I have so many things on my Amazon wish list. It's just crazy. Of different books going on. And then I see somebody else is coming out with a book and I'm like, okay, when's it coming out? You know, when can I get a hold of it? And so, you know, again, these experiences, you have to continue just to change and evolve and learn, and getting to meet people like you and things like that. That this is where I grow. This is my growth.
Yeah. And I resonate with you in those books as well, like just gobbling up information, stories through other people, right? You know, through the podcast, through the books that you can get that are constantly coming out on people's experiences. I mentioned a little bit in the bio about the fact that Northside is going through this solution tree screening process for Model PLC school. So tell me a little bit about what that means for your school and, you know, recognizing kind of the work that teachers are doing in the PLCs for their instruction and for the positive effect that will have on your students.
Well, you know, it's amazing the word PLCs. You hear a lot of schools that say, hey, we're doing PLCs.
Yeah.
We were doing PLCs at one time, you know, several years ago. It's when I first got there. It's like, yeah, we're doing PLCs. And they were staff meetings or they were meetings and you're sitting there unfortunately griping the whole time about something that's went on with Johnny, you know, or can you believe that they're not turning in their homework or things like that. And so we decided to do things with a purpose. And so through the process we recognized what Solution Tree, you know, suggested through the materials that they have and through the things that I had read. And so what we try to do with our PLCs, I have a small one with four teachers that teach geometry. We have an agenda on a weekly basis. And I give a couple of minutes to, let's get, again, with teachers, you kind of treat them sometimes the same as students. Let's get the things out of the way. We have a couple of minutes, but once that 2 minutes is over with, here's our focus. And so a lot of what we do is we started looking at curriculum. Again, what are the essential standards that are important to that student to continue on their path in Arkansas through Algebra 2 and Algebra 3, or some might be pre-calculus and calculus, but what do they need to be successful at that level and successful past high school? And whether that's college, whether that's a trade, or whether that's getting a job, you know, what is essential to them? And it can be a deep discussion when you've been teaching something for so many years and you have those sacred cows. I don't know if that's a good thing to say, but you have those things that you've taught for years. And, you know, you ask the question, is that really necessary, you know, for us to really get across? And so as we continue the process, our principal, Dr. Rathman, of course, applied. And we, again, we're the first school of our, with our demographics, I believe, in the entire nation that has now been recognized as a model PLC. And so this year we're taking the next step of, let's analyze the data. Are we making next step decisions based on the data that our students are doing? We're doing common formative assessments. We have an RTI program that we call What I Need. And so If a student is struggling in a particular standard, then and another teacher has shown data that they're having a lot of success with it, well, let me send that student to them for a win session and let them work their magic. You know, again, you have to swallow your pride sometimes and say, well, I'm not doing something right for it to connect. And at the same thing, what have I done successfully that they can send their students to me? Even students that are no longer mine, they sign up for my win session and they ask questions. And we just, you know, again, it's not about what's mine. It's about what are we going to do to be successful as a group, as a school, as a content area. And so it's small steps. And again, it goes along with culture. Once these things start clicking together, you're going to see changes in the attitude. And I'm a firm believer that once those things happen, your content is going to follow through. You know, if I get a student comfortable in my class, the first thing I worry about is developing that relationship. The second thing I worry about is, okay, are you going to learn? Because that happens. It's a natural thing. If they have a relationship with you, they're going to invest themselves and so we have a lot of discussions about that, about what we can do to really engage and get students involved. So that's just a small part of the whole big, I mean, it's a huge thing. And we actually got to host PLC Live Institute in Fort Smith this summer. And so it was a huge opportunity to get to listen to in person from Mike Meadows and some of them, and like, you know, just ask questions. You know, it's kind of intimidating to raise your hand and say, can you know, to Dr. Muhammad, who's one of the best culture people I know, and say, hey, can you tell me more about this? You know, and so it's like it's just amazing opportunity. And so I can't wait to see what happens. And it's small steps, but we celebrate those steps and then we move on. So, but never can set back. So we got to always continue to move forward and strive for that next step. That's a big part of it. So,
yeah, and it seems, out there. Yeah, you really explained well what the process is and kind of how you're using that, you know, being a model PLC school, you know, how that works at your school. And, you know, because like you said, a lot of schools will say we're doing PLCs, but actually using the RTI model, the solution tree framework, and, you know, finding out what is essential, right? Asking yourself those questions, right? So
I think they call it PLC Light, don't they? PLC Light, if you know, you say you're doing it, but you're not doing quite everything. So
yeah. So and there's, you know, a lot of people will say, well, I know PLC, but, you know, I've had a couple of guests on here that talk a lot about PLCs, and just you know, there's certain ways to do it right. You know, like you said, you're it's changing the culture, and then the curriculum will follow. So
yeah,
we've talked about a lot of different things about your school culture, about kind of your teaching journey. But out of everything we talked about, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
Well, you know, teaching is a lot about patience and a lot about, you know, just letting go. It's, you know, as adults, we just continue to, you know, somebody upsets us and we see them the next time and you're like, oh, there's that person, you know, I can't, you know, you just think about those, that thing. And with kids, you know, there's just so much going on in their lives. And you just, you know, they say, you don't know what's going on. And I said, yeah, I don't. And I said, so let me know. And talk to me, let me know. And so, you know, again, they're going to have bad days. You're going to have bad days. But I had a class yesterday, said, man, Mr. Hurst, you just must have a lot of patience, because they were having a rough day, the class was. And I kept having to say, we got to focus. We got to focus, guys. We got to, you know, leave each other alone. Stop, you know, stop touching that person in front of you. Stop taking their stuff. And And when you have 30 kids in class, that's just the way it is sometimes. And when you come into my class, it's, if you like kids sitting still, being quiet, you're not in my class. It's loud. It's, we talk a lot. We, you know, we have fun. We do things. Some kids are listening to music. I believe if they work better listening to music, then listen to music and, you know, and do your work. And so it's just, I try to meet them halfway. Yeah. And again, it's sometimes that's not easy because I'm thinking, you know, I'm just tired some days. It's just, especially by the end of the week, you're like, man, on Friday, it's like, well, when's the last hour going to be done? And you have weeks like this week where I'm also a senior sponsor and you're selling, you know, you're selling parking lot spaces that to them is a huge deal. And you're like, dude, it's a parking space. And they're like, no, but I need this parking space.
Yeah.
I need this to happen. And Monday you have a meeting after school and you have PLC meetings and you have a training about the PSAT 9 next week. And you're one of the people that are given the test. And so again, you've got to be patient and you just, I take a day at a time, a week at a time, what's going on next week. Because if I look ahead, it can make you crazy. It can make you crazy, you know? And so what do I need to do this week to be successful? In the morning, what do I need to do as I'm drinking my coffee and eating my toast? I'm thinking, what do I need to do today to be successful? And, you know, keep it balanced. If I call a parent because a student's failing or they had a bad day, then I try to call a parent whose kid is awesome and making an A+. I try to keep things balanced. And, you know, that's just, it's the little things that I think adds up. And as you continue to go on your journey, you know, unfortunately, I see a lot of people deciding to get out of education and it breaks your heart. And you're like, you got to have that patience that sometimes, you know, you're eventually going to find your place. You're going to find your people and, you know, look around, see what happens. And that's what I had to do. I'll be honest. If I would have stayed, and I love this town, I still live in the town that I grew up in and that I started teaching in. I love this town. But if I would have stayed here teaching, I don't think I would be happy right now because it would be the same thing every day. And that's not the same for everybody that teaches here. That's not what I'm saying. That's how it'd be for me. And so you've got to find your place, you got to find your people, and you just got to be patient. And that's the biggest piece of advice that I can give to anybody. And if you give it your all and it doesn't work, that's fine. But I'm going to give my all and everything and just take it a day at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so important to remember. And I'll put that in the show notes just as those words of advice, right? Well, where can people connect with you and find you online?
Well, on the biggest social media thing I use is Twitter. It's at Marshall Hurst. And then I have a website that, again, is relatively new. That's marshallhurst.com. And Marshall is M-A-R-S-H-A-L. Usually people might put two L's. And Hurst, H-U-R-S-T. And, you know, the biggest thing is I've shifted to, of course, Teach Better to start my blogs. And, of course, I try to update Twitter as much as possible on anything like that and just continuing to look for opportunities to get my story out and, you know, have the opportunity to be live and to say this. I can write all I want, but I think sometimes it's the way you tell the story that I try to be more successful at. And so so anything like that, if you need to email me, mhurst3614@yahoo.com. Any type of questions or anything I can help with, I'm always open to doing that. And so, again, if there's anything I can do in any way, I will try my best. Sometimes it's, again, you might be the first person I talk to, and five people later, I've learned a better way. I'll come back to you just like I do my classes. So we'll get there eventually. We'll get there together.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.